Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 2 of The Real Pod with Jeff and Alistair. Sitting here to discuss everything real estate and mortgage related and everything going on in the British Columbia real estate industry. So excited to be back, Jeff. Excited to be back with episode 2. How are you doing, my man?
I'm doing well, doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Had a good weekend. Went to the Canucks game on Saturday. I'm a big Jets fan because that's my hometown, so it was tough watching them get roughed up and playing literally the worst game I have ever seen them play since they've come back to Winnipeg. It was an absolute disaster. Vancouver played good, but the Jets made them look a lot better than what they really were.
I you know what, since it's Monday and we're starting this new week off, I don't want to create any negative energy and remind you what that score actually was.
Right. It was just brutal. It was funny because I was sitting there with the wife. First goal goes in, everybody stands up and cheer. I'm sitting in my chair going, okay, good job, Canucks. No big deal, guys. We'll get that back. 2-0 goes in. Second goal goes in about like 5-10 minutes later, 7 minutes later. I'm like, uh-oh, this is getting bad. I'm standing and clapping. I'm like, this is.
And then were you wearing your Jets jersey?
I sure was.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And then the third goal goes in, and I look at Michelle, and I'm like, well, I think it's time to leave. This is only the first period in. I'm like, man, this game's over. I think it's time to go. I was a trooper, though. I made it through the whole game.
Yeah, you had to stay for the hot dogs and beer.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly it. All right. Well, man, I know you got some meetings to get out and go to, so I figure we should probably get into it. So I know last week was a super busy week. We had rate announcements. We had the BC February market report come out. And then we also had a great discussion on the 2024 housing reform that was unveiled by the NDP government. And I thought that was a really important thing for us to touch on this week, especially how much of a focus there has been on affordable living and creating affordable living, creating housing. And I thought we may want to touch on that. I know that I have my own views on that, which I may keep a little bit quiet through this throughout this podcast. But I think it's something that's super important for us to touch on. Really, something important for British Columbians to understand. I think that being an outsider, being born and raised in Winnipeg, Manitoba, I have been exposed to what affordable housing looks like. The unfortunate belief that I have is people that have been born and raised in British Columbia, whose parents have been able to afford housing, have a disjointed view of what the housing market truly is and how it's reflected literally across Canada, including Toronto, including Ontario, which is, by comparison to the rest of Canada, a high housing market. But really, it's still not nearly as volatile as British Columbia is. And that is, I know, one of the reasons why the NDPs have been kind of running on this platform this year. As I like to say, it's a little bit of an easy re-election campaign, my view itself. I think it's something that we should delve into, but I'll let you get into it because you're the expert in a lot of this stuff, right?
Well, yeah. So April 1st is going to be rolling around here. It's just around the corner, and our BC government is rolling out the first time, what are we calling it? The first time home buyer exemption. So what that really means in a nutshell is that anybody that is a first time home buyer, and what that also means is that you've never owned a piece of property anywhere in the world. So if you've never owned a piece of property anywhere in the world, you are a first time home buyer here in British Columbia. That first time home buyer exemption is getting raised for purchases of up to $835,000. And then there's a sliding scale from 835 to 860,000. So what that really means is that if you are buying a property at 835,000, you're saving as a first-time homebuyer roughly around $8,000.
Okay, so one of the questions I have, because I had read that federally they were removing the first-time homebuyers program, right? Is that
that's
how
the first time home buyer incentive program?
Incentive. So how do those two differ then? Maybe is there a differing, like, how does that, does one affect, is does one cancellation affect what they're doing for British Columbia in that end, on our end?
No. So remember, the first time homebuyer incentive plan was where, which was a CMHC initiative where the government was actually going to come in and match the down payment of, I believe it was up to 20%. It was a program, and we've talked about this before, which was made possibly an election, what do we want to call that, a marketing idea,
right,
will be rolled out as far as at election time. And it just didn't really kind of do what it was intended to do. It really didn't have the impact that it was believed to be. And to be honest with you, I think there was less than 100,000 Canadians that actually even utilized the program. So the first time homebuyer incentive program, that is being kiboshed. It has nothing to do with the first time homebuyer exemption, because remember, that first time homebuyer incentive program was a federally regulated product. Right. This is a provincially regulated product, and only in British Columbia.
Right. And I think that's one of the big things to distinguish, because, you know, again, we're going to be reading all of those things and people are going to see that plastered, right? Oh, they're kiboshing this incentive program. And then people in British Columbia are going to say, well, wait a second, that even further harms my ability to potentially purchase a property here. Now, how am I going to get in the market? So that was one of the things I thought was super important, just to distinguish so that people in British Columbia knew that there was still a way. The increase in the threshold, thank goodness, that they've increased that to 835. I always thought that was the most ridiculous number to put in place at $550,000 in the first place. Because I was sitting there going, tell me a property that you're going to buy in British Columbia, whether it be a condo, right, that you're going to purchase essentially $550,000, dependent on the market that you're in. If you're in Chilliwack and Abbotsford, sure, that may work. If you're in Langley, you're getting Langley, Surrey, it's getting tight. But now if you're New West, Burnaby, you know, going into Vancouver, there's no chance. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even help you. So thank goodness that they had a little bit of foresight to raise it to 835. But as I always say, provincial regulations are not foresight, they're reactionary. And it's all something to do with, oh, this didn't work, let's give this a shot. But again,
exactly.
Late my opinion to myself.
Well, and here's the takeaway on this first home buyer exemption, and to try to put it into a nutshell, it's rolling out April 1st.
Right.
Okay. Not going to be an April Fool's Day joke, we hope. It's rolling out April 1st. It affects first-time home buyers, right? Purchasing primary residences that are buying up to $835,000. And then there's a sliding scale from $835,000 to $860,000. What that property transfer tax is going to be is slowly kind of getting unraveled. And also an important thing to note, in my opinion, is that if you go past that sliding scale of $860,000, are you going to still be exempt from the first $835,000? And the common understanding is it is not. So if your purchase price goes $1 past that $835,000 and fits outside of that sliding scale, I believe you're going to be paying full pop on property transfer tax, just like it was previous to this, when the sliding scale was 500 to 525. You know, as soon as you went that $1 over of what that sliding scale was, you were paying full pop on the property transfer tax. So I believe this is going to be no different.
Okay. Wow. That's interesting. That is really interesting. And now, the new home build exemption. That's going to be really interesting. I have, because you know my opinions on what it's going to take. Again, this is supposed to help create affordable housing. You know my take on what it's going to take to create affordable housing. And I know that new builds play an absolute direct role, because we have to create more inventory in order to start diluting the market and creating affordable housing. So How is the new home build exemption going to work? How does that help?
Well, how does that help? This applies to everybody and anybody that's purchasing a newly built home. As of April 1st, that property transfer tax exemption is actually going to be bumped up to $1.1 million from $750,000. And then if you're purchasing a newly built home in the greater Vancouver area, that is going to be bumped to $1,150,000. So this, again, is for newly built homes. You do not have to be a first-time home buyer. You can be a 20th-time home buyer, but it has to be your primary residence.
So So we look at my deal is with affordable housing is the number that it actually has to get to.
I know.
It's the final number. I mean,
I know where you're going with this, Alistair. And we had a great conversation with this. And remember, I asked you, like, hey, why is the BC government doing this? And I think this is something so important that people need to know. But yeah, more importantly, the aftermath as far as what it really should be. So again, let's have that conversation. Why is the BC government doing this?
So this is my belief. All right. This is just my belief from everything I've seen. And as we've discussed before, I do have a little bit of a background in politics. Graduating, my degree is from the University of Manitoba in politics. I've ran in politics. So I've had the ability to sit in these rooms and in these discussions. And we all know when it comes to elections, we need something to run on, right? We need a platform to run on. During COVID, which was an extremely important time, and in my belief, we did do a good job, a better than average job, maybe not the greatest. I don't think anybody did a great job at handling the whole scenario. But I think Canada, from an outsider, literally taking myself out of it, I believe Canada did one of the better jobs of all the countries in terms of handling COVID. And then we ran on that. So as long as we maintained the status quo, kept as many people as we could healthy, put together the protective measures, everybody was happy because, you know, it was all about keeping ourselves safe, which was absolutely paramount at that time. Fast forward to today. We don't have a pandemic. We don't have something to, we don't, as politicians, there's nothing to hang your hat on, right? There's nothing to literally say, this is what we're going to go. Usually when you're losing an election back in the day, it was, okay, start a war, because now we're keeping our people safe. We're going to run on war. I'm the wartime president or the wartime prime minister, and I'm going to keep our country safe. And it's going to be me. Rally behind me, right? That was what it was. Same thing as COVID. Rally behind me. We're going to keep this country safe. So now we decided, hey, what's next up? Well, what's the thing that impacts Canadians the most? And as we all know, it is housing, without question. It is housing almost everywhere. Almost everywhere. Sans places like even Alberta, right? Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and the Maritimes, where coincidentally, they all have affordable housing, right? So you have now, it's an easy thing for the politicians to now say, hey, we're going to create affordable housing for everybody, right? For everybody. Well, what little do people know is, what does that number have to look like for it to be affordable housing? And I was telling you I read an article at the beginning of this year, actually it was, where they outlined, it was Western Investor, so it's not just some crazy little article, it was Western Investor, and they actually outlined what affordable housing needed to look like in British Columbia. And that number was 679,000 and change.
Wow.
$679,000 and change, which brought me to thinking, what are the chances that British Columbia will ever hit $679,000 in change? For a few reasons, I started thinking that. Well, one, just by, you know, environment, we're landlocked, right? We've got oceans and mountains, right? So our landmass, our literal ability to create more housing is limited because of the geography, right? And then we also have people that own homes. So if Jeff, if you're a lender, if the bank has approved somebody at $1.2 million, and next week their home is now worth $679,000, does the bank care that we are now at affordable housing? Or does that bank still want their money?
Pretty simple answer, I think.
Pretty simple answer. And then at the same time, if you're one of these said politicians that probably has an investment in said properties, what are the chances are these said politicians are going to create affordable housing for their for their investment to drop by 50%? What are the chances?
Yeah, not likely.
Not likely. So what are the chances then that British Columbia is going to actually see affordable housing of $679,000?
Yeah.
Logically, what are those chances?
I'm going to say slim to none.
Right.
Well, so, even the appreciation of a house, even in today's fair market value, right, is anywhere from, 4 to 6% annually.
Right.
So how can you go from a fair market value home in BC, which is well above that threshold, for it to come down? It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. And so that is where I think we do such a disservice to people in British Columbia and educating the people in British Columbia, because we still have this crazy notion that the bubble's going to burst, right? At some point, the market's going to crash and everybody hangs their hat on. It has to, it has to, it has to. And what I always say that, you know, one of the biggest reasons that I lost my election when I ran was I ran on honesty, right? I was one person that said, you know, if I got into the political arena, and it's actually the reason why I've never got back in, I was running on the platform of truth. I was going to say, you know, I'm going to be that real, that politician that just says it, that just tells it how it is. Whether or not somebody votes for me and elects me, that's going to be their choice. But I'm going to tell you how it is, so that you don't
sabotage your own platform.
That's what you do. It's true. I basically, by telling people I know that I'm not getting elected, because it's hard to hear the truth, right? Yeah. To hear it's never going to get better, right? It's a hard thing to take, because everybody, you know, it's just natural human emotion to want to gravitate towards hope as opposed to despair. But it's not necessarily despair. It's realism, right? It's understanding, okay, so if I'm never going to see quote unquote affordable housing, then I need to do whatever I can do to get into a market so I can create a life for myself in the future. So that is, I think, one of the parts that breaks my heart, frustrates me, whatever way you want to put it, with when I speak to people that are born and raised British Columbia, because when I speak to people that are moving here, right? When I speak to people that have just moved here from other provinces, right? Or let's say somebody from the United States, somebody relocating, everybody else that's lived somewhere else understands it, right? They get it. And they're like, yeah, this isn't going to change. This is crazy. But if I don't do something now, it's never going to help. I'm done in the future. And so I think that what troubles me the most is when I speak with the people that are born and raised in British Columbia, it just always feels like it's a sense of apathy, like, oh, well, this happens everywhere else, so it's not a big deal. Or, oh, this is just how it is, and I'll never see myself owning something. I just wish that we could do a little bit better of a job in educating and having the people of British Columbia feel confident that, okay, even though it's not going to get to 679, right?
Yeah.
I can get in now to be able to, you know, have something in the future. Because another article I read, sorry, because I want to give you the floor, another article that I read and in the same breath was saying that by the time, I think they said it was 2035 is the belief, that in British Columbia, only, what is it, they said 3% of wealth will own properties and the rest will be renting. That is the outlook in the next, now 11 years, is that very few, it'll only be the rich of the rich to own properties and everybody else is going to be renting. So again, when you're looking at 11 years out, you don't have a lot of time to jump into a market, especially again, too, once now that we see these cycles in terms of buyer to cool down to seller, these cycles now are no longer going 3 to 4 to 5 years. These cycles now are starting to turn in 2 and 3 years.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, that means your pricing is just escalating every 2 to 3 years, as opposed to every 4 to 5.
Well, and affordable housing is in British Columbia is very difficult, right? And this is where you have to rely on the bank of mom and dad. Like people will always say, well, how do you do it? We're seeing a lot of moms and dads coming on and co-signing. And at the end of the day, I have two favorite quotes. When is the best time to buy? Is when you can. And 90% of your net worth is going to come from the properties that you own and sell in your lifetime, not from your employment income. So even back to your point, housing is becoming more unaffordable than it is affordable. This is what our government is platform right now is to, hey, we're going to launch affordable housing. But the reality of it is affordable housing is in British Columbia is 679,000, right? Sure, these are going to give a little bit of a tax relief. But at the end of the day, it's getting harder. It's not getting easier. So again, when's the best time to buy? Is when you can. It's not waiting for the Bank of Canada to announce what's going on with the prime rate. It's not seeing what's going on. It's not a rate conversation. It's an affordability conversation, right? Because at the end of the day, it's what you can afford. It's not about what that rate is going to be. And if you can afford it. And keep in mind, Canada has one of the most conservative banking systems in the world. If you are getting approved for a mortgage, you can afford it and jump on it. Do not wait for rates to correct. Do not wait for the market to correct. I hate that word crash. Right. It's correct. And again, I think we really need to educate people in affordability and really educate people that, hey, 90% of your net worth when you retire is going to come from the properties that you have owned and sold. It's not going to be coming from your employment. It is not.
Well, and I like that. And again, to tag on, that is why, like last podcast, the first one, that's why we started, that's why we said, we talked about affordability. We spoke about how we started moving away from discussing the rate, because, you know, if you discuss the rate, everybody just panicked, right? You know, tears shot out of their eyes because they were looking at 2% a couple of years ago, and they're now looking towards re-upping and sitting at a rate of maybe 5%. And so they've got tears flowing out of their eyes. Anybody new to the market was sitting there kicking themselves because they were saying, oh, why didn't I do this 2 years ago when I should have? And I just thought, oh man, the market was going to crash, but I was wrong. And now the rates are crazy. It's got to stop. You got to stop looking at rates. You got to look, can I afford this? Knowing again, like I keep professing, knowing again, these rates will go down. Now, are we going to see below one again anytime too soon? Heck no. Okay, let's just, again, get that out of our heads. Are we going to see rates of 2 anytime too soon? No, let's get that out of our heads. Let's stop thinking about the past, because if we keep living in the past, we'll never move forward in the future. If we focus on affordability and what we can afford right now today, we can believe that there's a better than average chance that in the upcoming near future, these rates will go down and your affordability is going to become that much better. Right. And you're now taking advantage of properties that you're buying at their lowest point available. So you're gaining more equity, you're dealing with something you can afford, and you're finally in the market to allow yourself to be one of the 3% in 2035, as opposed to one of the 97% that are renting. And to think, and just to quickly pause on renting for a second, I read an article 2 days ago that is that because the rent has gotten so bad in British Columbia that they're now exploring rent controlling, just like they had back in New York during the day. They are now talking about implementing rent control in British Columbia. So that is where I tell people, it is insane to me if you have your eyes fixed on a market crashing, a market adjusting, whatever we want to call it, right? and saying, hey, I'm going to try to wait out a market, as opposed to, hey, I'm just going to not refuse to deal in emotion anymore. Now let's deal in analytics, right? Let's be a little bit analytical. Let's be a little bit smarter in our decisions, and let's just get into a market so that I'm not forced into a place where I'm being bled out in rent. I mean, people in Vancouver making $100,000 a year and having and being evicted from their homes because they can't afford the rent. That is crazy. Yeah. Crazy. It's crazy.
Absolutely.
That's my rant.
Yeah. And a good one to end.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Well, and I know, so, well, it's been great. I know that this has been a little bit of a Alistair ranting on the state of the BC housing industry, but as always, truly appreciated. Rates did what did we do? We just had the rate announcement last week, actually, and what did happen quickly?
Well, overnight lending rate remained the same. So right. What that really means to variable holder, anybody that has a prime rate and the variable rate, a line of credit, secured or unsecured, the prime rate has not changed. It still remains at 7.2%. We are getting another Bank of Canada announcement April 10th of 2024. There's a lot of speculation that the overnight lending rate is going to remain the same. And again, you know, back to purchasing, we always hear, Alistair, or how many times have you heard is, I'm going to wait for the next rate announcement to see what I want to do. Yep. And this is also, to me, so important for those to understand is that these Bank of Canada announcements affect variable rate mortgage holders only. One of the questions that we always ask is like, hey, are you thinking about doing a variable or a fixed rate? And if a person or a borrower or one of our clients is saying, hey, we're thinking about doing a fixed, you do not have to wait for this Bank of Canada announcement. It has no impact on fixed rates. What has the impact on fixed rate are bond yields, right? So again, I always tell people, if you want to get an indicator as far as where your fixed rates are going to go, take a look at the 10-year bond yield out of the US. If you see that spiking up, that's usually an indicator that your fixed rate is going to go up. If you see that bond yield, that US bond yield going down, that's a good indicator that your fixed rates are going to go down. So fixed rates are taking over the variable rate. Since, you know, the variable rate has increased 11 times over a year and a half, something that was never foreseen. So there's so much conversation about fixed rates versus variable rates. And if you are thinking about purchasing a home and you are doing a fixed rate, don't worry about what the Bank of Canada is going to do to our overnight lending rate. It affects variable rate mortgage holders only.
And that's amazing advice. That's amazing insight. And that is really the reason why you and I got together to do this kind of stuff. It's so important. The education in all of this is so important. People don't typically get this, unfortunately. We always talk about it. There's a lot of great mortgage brokers out there, but at the same time, there's a lot of not so great mortgage brokers out there. And it's the same as realtors. There's a lot of great realtors out there, and there's a lot of not so great realtors. And the power team and the person that you have educating you in what we've been talking about all day today is really your most significant purchase. You got to think you're spending $1.5 million, right? It doesn't, or $500,000 monetary. Once you're hitting spending $300,000, let's just be honest. Very few people have that money to be able to spend. So when you are looking to invest your money, and that's what you're doing right now, you're investing your money. You better be doing it with somebody that you trust, with somebody that is giving you the best advice possible to truly achieve your goals. So I love doing this, not as a reason for people to use you and I. I mean, it's great. I want everybody listening to this to choose Jeff and myself as their representatives, right? But if they don't, it's fine. As long as they've taken the education that we've been able to give them and say, if they're getting the wrong information from their team, they can say, whoa, 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 I heard this.
Yeah.
Let's pause here. Right.
I always love that saying. It's a one degree of separation. If you can just gather some information, some education, and separate yourself from what people are not doing, it puts you in that much better in a position to make educated choices. Right. Yeah. And likewise, if you're not, you can make a lot of uneducated choices based on emotion. And we all know if you're making big decisions based on emotion, bullshit. 9 to 10 times is not going to work in your favor.
It's true. Yeah. Nine times out of 10, easier said than done. Yes, exactly. You're making a poor decision when you're making emotional decisions. And that's what it is. That's why I keep saying we got to start thinking more analytically. We can't let the emotion of markets, the emotion of the media, because that's what they're here to do. I mean, God bless the media. It doesn't matter if you're right, left, or middle, right? The job, the first and foremost job of media is entertainment. Right. So it's to put on whatever is going to heighten somebody's emotions. Right. And when we have a heightened emotions, we act irrationally. Right. And that's why that's why I always say that government is a reactive entity as opposed to a proactive, because governments react to what their people are telling them. They don't actually sit there and think about what is going to be best for their people, because they only have 4 years. Right. So they say, hey, what am I going to do to make my people happy while I'm here? So if we can take the time to be proactive and educate the people out there, I truly thank you for helping me do this. Everybody, it's been a great show today. This was episode number 2 of The Real Pod with Jeff and Alistair. Amazing. Thank you so much for everybody for taking the time to listen. Thank you, Jeff, for taking the time out of your busy morning to sit.
Absolutely. Always
today. And wish you guys all a great week, and we'll see you next Monday.
All right, my man. Have a great week.
Have a great week. We'll chat soon.
Ciao.
All right, ciao. Okay, I think that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
That was good. That was better than the first one. I felt it to even sounded a bit more natural.
You know, I think I have a good, very good chemistry, natural chemistry, right?
I think so. It was easy rip. Yeah.
It's easy to chat, easy to talk. It's just, you know, here's our opinion, maybe right, maybe wrong, but this is what our opinion is. And if you can take it and do something with it, awesome. Right.
That's it.
Good or bad.
That's it. And I think actually moving this into the podcast sphere, because I think we riff so well, it makes it easy to listen to. Right. Because it's not just two dudes sounding like they're trying to sell something. It's just two dudes sounding like, hey, they're going to have their little opinions on stuff, good or bad. And that's why I say, like, hey, man, you can argue anything you want to argue with me on on if this is a political thing or anything like that. That's what these are for. Right. Like they're there just to bounce back and forth and say, hey, no, Alistair, politics has nothing to do with this. They really do care about us being able to hold a home in BC. Yeah, sure. I'll argue with you wrong on that. But
you were going into that COVID conversation. I was like, you know, and I was going to jump in. COVID is one of the biggest reasons why we have a rate concern. This is one of the main reasons why we have a market value as far as where we're at. This is one of the reasons that the government mandated, you know, which, hey, it's an election year. I'm just going to hand out money, you know,
100% yourself
into a perfect storm. Right. So,
the interest rates and all these things going up is so we can pay back all the money that the government gave out. I would have said that too, but I didn't want to be accused of being Joe Rogan just yet. So
I was going to just roll into that, but our government does not have our best interest.
None at all.
The government has their best interest, and their best interest is to get serve enough time where they can get their pension.
That's it.
Whatever years that is, I believe it's 6.
Yep.
And then basically, you know what? Release me.
And that's it. Right? That's why I threw in the part there of where people within government having a vested investment interest in it too. That is one of the another reason why. Prices ain't going down, man, because do you know how many of these politicians, how many of these city councilors, how many of these guys have property investments, real estate investments in British Columbia? They're not letting their investment get hammered. Are you kidding me?
I think even outside of that, even if they did, you know how much change has to happen?
Yeah.
To get us back on that financially responsible train track?
Right.
Right. Like how much change even in an average household is it going to be? Now you imagine what a country has to do.
Exactly.
Right. It's, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but any government that has probably tried to do that ends up dead. dead or shot.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. That's my point, right? Because it's unless the only time you can announce it is in the second or third year. And even in the third year, it's super dicey. Because your rule when you get into politics is you do nothing in your first year and you do nothing in your fourth year that's going to upset anybody. Because your first year, you're trying to make people happy because you got elected. And your fourth year, you're trying to get reelected. So it's only in year two or three that you actually do something. And if you're going to do something that upsets somebody, you do it in year two so that they have three and four to forget about it. So that's my thing. If we haven't done anything in year two, I know we're not doing anything in year three or four.
Yeah.
Right? So that's where the announcements have to come in. You have to anger somebody in year two. And if you don't anger somebody in year two, you know it's not happening. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. And this is, I think, where this podcast will eventually go, right? Like so just have like, and again, people may not agree. This is our opinion.
It's so good. And it's good because I still think it's an opinion, and it's an opinion that people need to listen to, as opposed, like I said, to media, because to media, it's always to push on your emotions. Doesn't matter which side you are. Their goal is to get you hot and to get you angry. I personally am a conservative that for the most part thinks a lot independent, because I'm not a full crazed right wing independent or conservative, sorry, and I'm nowhere near left.
Right? I don't know what right and left is, to be honest with you. It's like people of faith. What's your denomination? Doesn't matter. This is your belief, right?
Exactly.
So what does the denomination mean? What does the right or left really mean? It's just where you believe.
Where you land. Exactly. So for me, I'm just somebody that believes in fiscal responsibility. That's how I am. I'm like, just spend your money, right? Like if you're going to be spending our money, if you're going to be taking our money, then use it appropriately. I agree that there needs to be social programs. I, though, don't believe that we need to give all of our money away to these social programs, right? Have our people pay for it that won't ever get to benefit from it, right?
And I don't understand the importance of small business. Understand this medium-sized business.
Right.
Understand, don't handcuff entrepreneurship, right? This is what makes this world turn.
World work.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. So exactly.
When you start to handcuff people doing what they're entrepreneurial at, you know, these are the people, these are that 3% we talk about, right? So you kind of that's actually not the 3%. 3% is even, you're handcuffing that middle class.
You're handcuffing 7 to 10 is what you're doing. 7 to 10%, like of that 10% where the entrepreneurs fall in, they're 7 to 10, and you're taking away their ability to succeed now. Right. And that's crazy to me. That's crazy because, again, like you just said, they make up the majority of the business sector in Canada. Right. Yeah. They drive the majority actually of the business economy in Canada is the entrepreneurs within Canada. So when we're not giving them tax breaks, when we're not doing something for them from a tax perspective, we're killing our Canadian economy, destroying
it. And the problem and to add to that, my opinion is you're also now creating all these platforms where you're putting money in, you're not taking money out, and this is where you become more financially in debt, because you're putting money into programs but you're not getting enough money coming back into you,
right?
And you're just creating yourself a shitstorm, right?
All right, man,
think we'll record this, do something with it, we'll put
you betcha, my man. All right, buddy, we'll chat soon.
Okay, see ya.
Have a great day. Bye.